In a world that moves at relentless speed, where reactions are instant and emotions run unchecked, calmness is a rare and underestimated strength. Most people believe that power lies in dominance, in force, in the ability to assert control over others. But true power, the kind that lasts, the kind that commands respect, is found in the ability to remain steady, to respond rather than react, to move through life with clarity rather than impulse. The strongest individuals in history, philosophers, warriors, leaders, were not those who were loudest, nor those who acted out of anger or desperation. They were those who understood that the mind, when trained to remain calm, becomes unshakable. The Stoics practiced this through self-discipline. Zen masters cultivated it through stillness. Great strategists relied on it to outthink their opponents. They all knew that emotional turbulence is a weakness and stillness is a weapon. Modern psychology and neuroscience confirm what ancient wisdom has long taught. A calm mind leads to better decision-making, sharper focus, and increased resilience. Those who master their emotions are not free from stress, but they do not let stress dictate their actions. They do not let fear control them, nor anger cloud their judgment. Instead, they train themselves to pause, to observe, to respond with intention rather than impulse. This episode explores the science, philosophy, and practical techniques behind cultivating calm. From understanding the biology of stress to mastering emotional resilience, we will break down how to develop an unshakable mindset, one that remains clear, focused, and powerful in any situation. Because true power is not in aggression, it is in control, not in reacting, but in choosing your response. And once you master this, you master yourself. The mind is a battlefield, constantly processing stimuli, interpreting threats, and dictating reactions before we even have time to reflect. To the untrained mind, stress feels immediate, overwhelming, and inescapable. But to those who understand the science of calm, stress is not an enemy, it is simply information. The difference between those who panic and those who remain composed is not found in external circumstances, but in how their brain has been trained to respond. At its core, calmness is a biological process. The nervous system has two primary modes, the sympathetic, which triggers fight or flight, and the parasympathetic, which promotes rest and recovery. Most people exist in a constant state of activation, rushed, anxious, reactive, without realizing that they have the ability to shift their nervous system into a state of calm. This is why some individuals crumble under pressure, while others appear unshaken. It's not about being naturally calm. It's about knowing how to regulate the nervous system in real time. Neuroscientists have found that when we react impulsively, the amygdala, our brain's threat detection center, takes control. It floods the system with stress hormones, narrowing focus, speeding up heart rate, and triggering defensive emotions like anger or fear. But those who train their minds to remain calm activate the prefrontal cortex instead, the part of the brain responsible for rational thought, long-term decision-making, and impulse control. This is why the ability to remain calm is not just an emotional skill, it is a cognitive advantage. A calm mind is a sharper mind, capable of seeing solutions rather than problems, capable of making decisions based on wisdom rather than fear. The greatest warriors, thinkers, and leaders have all understood this. The samurai practiced Fudoshin, the immovable mind, training themselves to stay emotionally centered in the face of danger. Stoic philosophers like Epictetus taught that events are not distressing, our interpretation of them is. Zen monks spend years mastering stillness, knowing that the greatest battles are won not through force, but through clarity. Their strength did not come from being untouched by stress, but from knowing how to remain steady within it. To develop this level of control, the first step is awareness. Pay attention to how your body reacts to stress. Does your breath shorten? Does your pulse quicken? Does your mind race? Recognizing the shift is the first step toward controlling it. The second step is deliberate intervention. Slow your breath, relax your muscles, and remind yourself that no situation is as urgent as it seems. And the third step is practice. Every challenge is an opportunity to train. Every difficult moment, a test of your ability to remain composed. Science proves that calmness is not a personality trait, it is a skill. The brain can be rewired, the nervous system can be trained, and emotional responses can be reshaped. The warriors and philosophers of the past understood this instinctively, and modern neuroscience confirms it. Their lesson is clear. When the world speeds up, slow yourself down. When emotions rise, center yourself. Because true power is not in the force of your reaction, but in the clarity of your response. Not every situation demands an immediate reaction. The world rewards speed, quick decisions, instant responses, immediate gratification. But true strength, true clarity, comes from the ability to pause, to create space between stimulus and response, between emotion and action. The untrained mind reacts impulsively, driven by habit, fear, or external pressure. But the mind that has been conditioned for control pauses, observes, and responds with intention. This is what separates those who crumble under pressure from those who remain composed. The ability to pause is not weakness, it is mastery. It is the skill of stepping back before speaking, of assessing before acting, of letting emotions settle before making a choice that could alter everything. Viktor Frankl, the Austrian psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor, wrote, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom." He understood that while we may not control what happens to us, we always control how we respond, and that control is found in the pause. Neuroscience proves this principle. When faced with stress, the amygdala, the brain's fear center, immediately triggers a reaction. This is why people lash out in anger, make poor decisions under pressure, or feel overwhelmed by emotion. But the moment a person takes a conscious pause, even a few seconds, the prefrontal cortex, responsible for rational thinking, activates. The simple act of waiting before responding shifts control from impulse to logic, from emotion to clarity. The greatest leaders and thinkers in history have mastered this skill. Marcus Aurelius, one of the most powerful emperors of Rome, trained himself to delay reaction in moments of anger or frustration. He understood that an unfiltered response was rarely the right one. The samurai, in moments of combat, practiced pausing for a single breath before striking, ensuring that their action was precise, not reactive. Buddhist monks, in their pursuit of inner peace, developed the habit of observing emotions like passing clouds, never attaching themselves to the storm. The modern world rarely encourages this kind of control. It demands immediate answers, quick decisions, instant engagement. But the strongest minds resist that pressure. They know that most mistakes are made in haste, that clarity only emerges in stillness. To develop this ability, practice three things. First, before reacting, take one deep breath. This single pause interrupts the automatic response cycle. Second, mentally step outside of yourself. Observe the situation as if you were advising someone else. Third, ask, Will this reaction serve me in the long run? This reframes the impulse, forcing the mind to think beyond the moment. Viktor Frankl saw that freedom is found in the pause. Neuroscience proves that waiting even a few seconds changes the brain's response. The great warriors and leaders of history all understood that the ability to delay reaction is what separates the wise from the impulsive. Their lesson is clear. Those who pause before acting do not lose power, they gain it. Because real strength is not in how fast you respond, but in how well you respond. Difficulties are inevitable. Challenges will arise, plans will fall apart, and life will not always unfold as expected. But what separates the mentally strong from the mentally weak is not the absence of hardship. It is the ability to reframe those challenges as opportunities. The untrained mind sees obstacles as proof of failure, as reasons to quit, as forces working against them. But those who have trained their minds to be resilient see every difficulty as a chance to grow, to adapt, to become stronger. This is not about blind optimism or pretending that struggles do not exist. It is about shifting perspective, choosing to view adversity not as a setback, but as training. The ancient Stoics called this amor fati, the love of fate. It was the idea that every event, good or bad, could be transformed into something useful. Epictetus, who was born a slave and later became one of the most respected philosophers of his time, did not lament his hardship. He used it. He saw it as a forge, shaping his resilience, strengthening his character. He taught that we do not suffer because of events themselves, but because of our judgment of them. Modern psychology supports this ancient wisdom. The concept of cognitive reappraisal, the ability to change how we interpret an event, has been shown to reduce stress, increase resilience, and improve problem-solving ability. Studies show that individuals who reframe negative experiences as learning opportunities bounce back faster and perform better under pressure. It is not the situation that defines the outcome, it is the mindset. History is filled with those who turned adversity into advantage. Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison, but emerged not with bitterness, but with wisdom and a vision for unity. Thomas Edison, after thousands of failed experiments, famously said, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." Helen Keller, despite losing her sight and hearing as a child, became a writer, a thinker, a symbol of human resilience. None of these people escaped struggle. They transformed it. To develop this mindset, practice three things. First, change your internal dialogue. Instead of asking, "Why is this happening to me?" ask, "What is this teaching me?" Second, develop the habit of finding the lesson in every challenge. Whether it is patience, strength, or adaptability, every struggle has something to offer. Third, actively seek discomfort. The more you place yourself in difficult situations voluntarily, whether through physical training, mental challenges, or pushing past personal fears, the more naturally your mind will reframe hardship as growth. The Stoics believed that hardship is a teacher. Psychology proves that reframing challenges reduces stress and increases resilience. History shows that the greatest individuals were not those who avoided struggle, but those who used it. Their lesson is clear. The world does not determine whether you succeed or fail. Your interpretation of it does. And the strongest minds are the ones who take what is difficult and turn it into something powerful. Most people go through life fully immersed in their emotions, reacting instinctively to every high and low, letting circumstances dictate their state of mind. But those who train themselves to cultivate emotional detachment understand that true power comes from observation, not reaction. They recognize that they are not their thoughts, not their impulses, not their emotions. They are the ones watching them, choosing how to engage, deciding what holds meaning and what does not. This is the essence of becoming the observer, the ability to step back, to create space between stimulus and response, to see emotions as passing clouds rather than forces that must control behavior. Buddhist philosophy calls this non-attachment, the practice of acknowledging emotions without being consumed by them. The Stoics called it apatheia, not the absence of feeling, but the ability to remain undisturbed by it. Both traditions understood that the moment you realize your emotions do not own you, they lose their power over you. Marcus Aurelius, one of history's greatest practitioners of this mindset, wrote, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." He trained himself to see emotions as mere information, as signals from the body, rather than absolute truths. He knew that anger, fear, frustration, they arise, but they do not have to dictate action. The untrained mind reacts automatically. The trained mind watches, analyzes, and responds with wisdom. Modern neuroscience confirms this. Studies on mindfulness and emotional regulation show that the simple act of observing emotions rather than acting on them reduces stress, improves decision-making, and increases mental clarity. When people react impulsively, they allow the amygdala, the brain's emotional center, to take control. But when they step back, when they recognize the emotion without immediately reacting, the prefrontal cortex, the center of rational thought, activates instead. This is the biological proof that detachment is not suppression, it is control. But how do you develop this ability? First, practice noticing emotions without judgment. When you feel anger, frustration, or fear, instead of reacting, pause. Label the emotion. This is anger. This is frustration. This is doubt. The moment you name it, you create distance from it. Second, train yourself to delay reaction. When something triggers you, force yourself to wait before responding. Even a few seconds of pause strengthens the mind's ability to remain in control. Third, reframe emotions as temporary. No feeling lasts forever. Just as joy is fleeting, so is sadness, anxiety, and fear. The more you remind yourself of this, the less control emotions have over you. Marcus Aurelius believed that strength comes from mastering the mind, not controlling the world. Neuroscience proves that observing emotions, rather than reacting to them, changes the way the brain processes stress. Buddhist and Stoic traditions both teach that detachment is not indifference, it is freedom. Their lesson is clear. The moment you realize that emotions are not commands, but passing experiences, you reclaim control over yourself. And in a world where most people are slaves to their impulses, the ability to remain steady is the greatest power of all. Breathing is something so automatic, so effortless, that most people never think about it. Yet in moments of stress, panic, or anger, the breath is the first thing to change, shallow, rapid, uncontrolled. And in moments of deep calm and focus, the breath slows, deepens, and becomes deliberate. This is not coincidence. The connection between breath and mental state is fundamental, and those who master their breath master their emotions, their reactions, and ultimately, their ability to remain calm under any circumstance. Ancient traditions have long understood this truth. The samurai trained in controlled breathing to maintain composure in battle. Buddhist monks practiced breath awareness as a gateway to enlightenment. The Stoics, though they did not explicitly speak of breathwork, advocated for control over the body's impulses, which begins with the breath. All of these disciplines recognized that when you control your breath, you control your nervous system, and when you control your nervous system, you control your mind. Modern science confirms what warriors and philosophers have always known. The autonomic nervous system, which governs stress and relaxation, is directly influenced by breathing. Rapid, shallow breaths activate the sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight mode, leading to increased heart rate, tense muscles, and heightened emotional responses. But slow, controlled breathing activates the parasympathetic nervous system, bringing the body into a state of calm, lowering stress hormones, and restoring mental clarity. This is why, when faced with a crisis, the simple act of taking a deep breath can instantly shift how you feel. One of the most effective techniques for this is box breathing, a method used by Navy SEALs to stay calm under extreme pressure. It involves inhaling for 4 seconds, holding for 4, exhaling for 4, and holding again for 4. This simple practice forces the mind to slow down, bringing immediate clarity and control. Another technique, the physiological sigh, involves taking a deep inhale, followed by a short second inhale, then a slow, extended exhale, proven to rapidly reduce stress in under a minute. These methods are not just exercises, they are tools for survival in a world that constantly pulls you toward anxiety and reaction. To integrate this practice into daily life, start by noticing your breath in stressful moments. Instead of allowing it to control you, take over, slow it down, deepen it, regulate it. Second, build breath control into your routine. Spend even just a few minutes each day practicing controlled breathing so that when stress arises, calm is already second nature. Third, use breath as a reset button. Whenever emotions feel overwhelming, before reacting, pause. Take one deep breath, hold, exhale. This alone is enough to shift perspective. The samurai trained their breath to master their fear. Modern science proves that controlled breathing regulates stress. Ancient wisdom and modern neuroscience both confirm that breath is not just a function of the body, it is a tool for mental dominance. Their lesson is clear. When the world speeds up, when emotions threaten to take over, when chaos surrounds you, return to the breath. Because in a single controlled inhale and exhale, you reclaim control over yourself. Not every emotional reaction comes from the present moment. Much of what we feel, anger, frustration, fear, has roots far deeper than the situation in front of us. We think we are reacting to an event, but often we are reacting to something much older, an unresolved experience, a past wound, a belief formed long ago. This is why understanding triggers is essential to mastering calm, because the strongest minds are not those who never feel emotion, but those who recognize why they feel it and choose how to respond. A trigger is anything that provokes an intense emotional reaction that seems disproportionate to the moment. A simple comment, a slight inconvenience, a delayed response. These things should not have the power to control us, yet for many, they do. Why? Because the mind does not differentiate between past and present, it only knows patterns. If a situation reminds you of something painful, the brain activates a response as if that past event is happening again. This is why some people react with anger to small criticisms, why others shut down in conflict, why stress can feel overwhelming even when nothing is objectively wrong. It is not the present moment that is controlling them. It is the past. Psychologists call this emotional conditioning. The brain creates associations between past pain and present experiences, causing automatic responses. But the moment you become aware of this, you gain the power to break the cycle. The emotionally weak are ruled by their triggers, but those who understand them step back, observe, and refuse to be controlled. This is why emotional mastery is not about suppressing feelings. It is about recognizing their source. The Stoics understood this centuries ago. Seneca wrote that we suffer more in imagination than in reality. He meant that much of our emotional turmoil is not caused by the event itself, but by the mind's interpretation of it, interpretations shaped by past experiences. Buddhist philosophy teaches the same principle. Awareness dissolves reactivity. The moment you observe an emotion instead of being consumed by it, you begin to reclaim control. So how do you break free from your triggers? First, identify them. Pay attention to what consistently provokes strong emotional responses in you. Certain words, tones, situations. Second, trace them back. Ask yourself, what does this remind me of? When have I felt this before? Often the root cause is something long buried. Third, reframe the experience. Instead of seeing a trigger as something that controls you, see it as an opportunity to train yourself. Every time you remain calm in the face of a trigger, you rewire your brain, proving to yourself that you are not bound by past reactions. Seneca taught that suffering is created in the mind. Neuroscience proves that awareness disrupts conditioned emotional responses. Buddhist philosophy reminds us that observation is the first step to freedom. Their lesson is clear. Until you understand what triggers you, you will always be controlled by forces you do not see. But the moment you bring them into awareness, they lose their power. And that is where true mastery begins. Resilience is not built in moments of ease. It is forged in discomfort, in setbacks, in the ability to endure without breaking. Those who crumble under pressure are not necessarily weaker. They are simply untrained. But those who train themselves to remain steady, to withstand stress without being consumed by it, develop an advantage that cannot be taken away. This is the essence of emotional resilience, the ability to bend without breaking, to face adversity without being overtaken by it. Most people assume resilience is about toughness, about suppressing emotion, about never feeling affected by difficulties. This is a mistake. True resilience is not suppression, it is adaptation. It is not about ignoring stress, but about learning how to carry it without letting it define you. Like a tree that sways in the wind but remains rooted, the strongest minds are not those that never feel pressure, but those that have trained themselves to handle it without losing clarity. Modern psychology confirms this. Studies on stress resilience show that individuals who develop strong coping mechanisms, self-awareness, reframing thoughts, deliberate breathing, recover from challenges faster and maintain mental clarity under pressure. The brain, like a muscle, strengthens through exposure to controlled stress. This is why the most resilient people are not those who avoid hardship, but those who face it deliberately, consistently, and with a mindset that sees struggle as training rather than suffering. The ancient philosophers and warriors understood this deeply. Epictetus, who endured slavery and hardship, taught that external events do not determine suffering. Our response to them does. The samurai embraced the philosophy of Seishio Chuetsu, transcending life and death, training themselves to remain calm even in the face of mortality. Buddhist monks, through meditation, expose themselves to discomfort, not to eliminate pain, but to learn how to exist within it without resistance. Across cultures, across time, the lesson remains the same. Those who build resilience do not escape hardship. They master it. To cultivate this in your own life, practice three things. First, voluntarily expose yourself to controlled discomfort. Whether through cold showers, intense workouts, or difficult conversations, train yourself to endure stress in small, manageable doses. Second, reframe challenges as opportunities for growth. Instead of seeing adversity as a setback, view it as necessary training for a stronger mind. Third, develop recovery rituals. Even the most resilient individuals do not remain in a constant state of stress. They know when to rest, when to reflect, and when to reset. Epictetus proved that hardship does not define us, our response does. Science confirms that exposure to controlled stress strengthens mental endurance. The warriors and philosophers of history understood that resilience is not about avoiding struggle, but about meeting it with strength, with clarity, with the unshakable belief that nothing can break you unless you allow it to. Their lesson is clear. You are not fragile. You are not weak. You are untrained. And with the right mindset, with the right practice, you can become unbreakable. Conflict is inevitable. No matter how composed, intelligent, or well-intentioned you are, there will be moments when you are challenged, when words are thrown like weapons, when misunderstandings ignite tension, when emotions escalate beyond reason. Most people meet conflict with aggression or avoidance. They either react impulsively, letting emotions dictate their words, or they withdraw entirely, hoping the problem will resolve itself. But those who train themselves in calm communication understand that neither aggression nor avoidance leads to real resolution. True mastery lies in the ability to handle conflict without losing control. The mistake many make is believing that calmness in conflict means weakness, that being composed means being passive. But the strongest individuals throughout history have proven otherwise. The greatest warriors, thinkers and leaders were not those who shouted the loudest, nor those who avoided confrontation, but those who remained calm in the storm, who responded with precision rather than impulse. Marcus Aurelius ruled over an empire, yet kept his emotions in check during crisis. Nelson Mandela, after decades of imprisonment, emerged not with rage, but with measured wisdom. Sun Tzu taught that the supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. These men did not suppress their emotions. They mastered them. Science confirms what history has shown. Studies on emotional intelligence reveal that individuals who manage their emotions during conflict achieve better outcomes, maintain stronger relationships, and are perceived as more competent leaders. The reason is simple. When emotions take over, logic shuts down. The amygdala, the brain's emotional center, hijacks rational thought, leading to impulsive decisions, reactive words, and escalating tension. But when calm is maintained, the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain responsible for logic and long-term thinking, stays engaged, allowing for clear, strategic responses rather than emotional outbursts. To master conflict with calmness, practice three things. First, train yourself to pause before responding. A single breath, a moment of silence, a second of reflection can mean the difference between a reaction and a response. Second, ask questions rather than make accusations. Instead of saying, "You're wrong," say, "Help me understand your perspective." This lowers defenses and shifts the dynamic from confrontation to discussion. Third, control your tone and body language. People react not just to words, but to energy. A steady voice, relaxed posture, and composed expression signal confidence and strength, turning conflict into an opportunity rather than a battle. Marcus Aurelius led with restraint, not rage. Neuroscience proves that control over emotion leads to better decision-making. History's greatest leaders won their battles not through force alone, but through the mastery of communication. Their lesson is clear. Power is not in how loudly you speak, but in how well you listen, how skillfully you respond, and how unshaken you remain when tensions rise. Calm is not submission. It is dominance over yourself. Control is an illusion. Most people spend their lives trying to manipulate outcomes, predict the future, and force circumstances to align with their expectations. They believe that if they just plan enough, if they just try harder, if they just anticipate every possible problem, they can bend reality to their will. But this pursuit of control is what leads to anxiety, frustration, and disappointment. Because the more we try to hold on to everything, the more we realize how little is actually within our grasp. The mentally strongest individuals are not those who control everything around them, but those who have learned the art of letting go. This is not passive resignation. It is the wisdom of understanding what is yours to influence and what is not. The Stoics called this the dichotomy of control, the recognition that some things are within your power, your actions, your responses, your mindset, while most things are not. Other people's decisions, unexpected setbacks, external circumstances. To fight against the uncontrollable is to fight a battle that cannot be won. But to release it, to focus only on what can be shaped and accept what cannot. This is where true peace begins. This philosophy is not just ancient wisdom. It is backed by science. Studies on stress and anxiety reveal that individuals who focus on what they can control while accepting what they cannot experience lower stress levels, improved emotional regulation, and greater overall life satisfaction. The human brain is wired to seek certainty, but the reality is, certainty is an illusion. The more we embrace uncertainty, the less power it has over us. Great leaders and thinkers have always understood this. Bruce Lee, one of the most disciplined martial artists in history, famously said, "Be water, my friend. Water does not resist obstacles. It flows around them. It does not panic when the path changes. It adapts." Lao Tzu, the founder of Taoism, taught that those who force control suffer, while those who move with life find peace. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself daily that external events were beyond him, but his response was always his own. They all knew that trying to control the uncontrollable only leads to suffering. To practice this in your own life, begin with three steps. First, identify what is truly within your control. When faced with a challenge, pause and ask, "Is this something I can influence?" If yes, take action. If no, release it. Second, develop trust in your ability to adapt. You do not need to control everything. You only need to be able to handle whatever comes. Third, train yourself to recognize the signs of attachment to control. Anxiety, frustration, impatience. These are signals that you are trying to grip something that was never yours to hold. The moment you release that grip, peace begins. Marcus Aurelius ruled an empire by focusing only on what he could change. Neuroscience proves that letting go of control reduces stress and increases clarity. Philosophers, warriors, and masters of the mind have all taught the same lesson. Life will never be predictable, but your response to it always can be. Strength is not in controlling everything. It is in knowing what to release. Because the more you let go, the freer you become. Calm is not something you practice only when life feels overwhelming. It is not a tool to be used just in moments of crisis or stress. The strongest minds do not wait until they are drowning in chaos to seek stillness. They make it a part of their daily existence. Calm is not a reaction. It is a habit, a way of life, a practice that, when cultivated consistently, becomes second nature. Most people live in a state of constant reactivity, rushing from one task to another, letting distractions dictate their focus, allowing emotions to pull them in every direction. They seek peace only when they feel anxious, but true stability comes from building it before it is needed. Just as a warrior does not wait until battle to train, those who master calmness do not wait until life becomes stressful to cultivate it. They make it part of their routine, their mindset, their identity. Science supports this truth. Studies on mindfulness and emotional regulation reveal that individuals who engage in daily calming practices, whether through breathwork, meditation, or simple moments of stillness, develop lower baseline stress levels, improved decision-making, and greater emotional resilience. The nervous system becomes conditioned to return to calm quickly, rather than remaining in a prolonged state of stress. In other words, the more you practice calm, the faster your mind and body return to it in difficult moments. Ancient traditions understood this deeply. The Stoics practiced pre-meditatio malorum, mentally preparing for hardships in advance, so that when adversity arrived, they were already steady. The samurai meditated before battle, training their minds to remain still even in the face of death. Buddhist monks incorporate moments of mindfulness into every aspect of daily life, ensuring that stillness is not something separate from living, but woven into it. These practices were not occasional, they were daily disciplines. To build calm as a way of life, start with small, consistent habits. First, create moments of stillness in your daily routine. Even just a few minutes of quiet reflection in the morning or before sleep trains your mind to seek steadiness instead of constant stimulation. Second, train yourself to pause before reacting. Make it a habit to take a single breath before speaking, before making a decision, before responding to emotion. Third, embrace the idea that external chaos does not require internal chaos. No matter how fast the world moves, you can move at your own pace. The Stoics, the samurai, the great thinkers of history all lived by this principle. Calm is not a destination. It is a practice. Modern neuroscience proves that training the mind in stillness makes resilience automatic. Their lesson is clear. If you want to be unshakable in moments of stress, do not wait for stress to arrive. Train yourself daily. Make calm your default. And when the storm comes, you will already know how to stand firm. Calm does not exist in isolation. Like ripples spreading across a still pond, it extends beyond the individual, shaping interactions, environments, and even the people around you. The presence of one steady mind has the power to influence an entire room, just as one storm of reactivity can turn harmony into chaos. This is why cultivating calm is not just a personal practice. It is a force that affects everything you touch. Most people underestimate how much their internal state affects those around them. When someone is anxious, their tension spreads. When someone is reactive, their energy fuels more reactivity. But when someone remains composed, they create an atmosphere of stability. This is why the most respected leaders, the most influential thinkers, and the most balanced individuals are those who do not just master themselves, but bring a sense of steadiness wherever they go. They do not absorb the chaos of the world, they transform it. Neuroscience proves this effect. Studies on emotional contagion reveal that humans unconsciously mirror the emotions of those around them. When someone projects calmness, it naturally regulates the nervous systems of others. This is why a single composed leader can de-escalate tension in a crisis, why a patient mentor can turn frustration into learning, why a steady presence can bring clarity to a chaotic situation. It is not magic, it is biology. People feel what you carry, whether you intend to share it or not. History is filled with individuals who embodied this principle. Mahatma Gandhi led a movement with unwavering composure, proving that calmness could be a form of resistance. The Stoics, like Seneca, believed that the mind's ability to remain steady could influence not just the self, but entire societies. Even in war, figures like the samurai understood that their emotional state affected the battlefield, that the warrior who remained unshaken could turn the tide of conflict through presence alone. These individuals did not just practice calm for themselves, they used it as a force to reshape their world. To cultivate this in your own life, begin with three steps. First, become aware of the energy you bring into situations. Before speaking, before reacting, ask yourself, am I adding to the chaos or bringing clarity? Second, develop the habit of being the calmest person in the room. This does not mean suppressing emotions. It means responding with control rather than impulse. Third, recognize that your calm is not just for you. When you train yourself to remain steady, you become a source of strength for those around you, family, friends, colleagues, even strangers. Seneca taught that tranquility within creates harmony without. Neuroscience confirms that calmness spreads just as easily as anxiety. Leaders, warriors, and philosophers throughout history have shown that true strength is not just personal, it is shared. Their lesson is clear. When you cultivate calm, you do not just transform yourself, you change the world around you. And in a world that is always rushing, always reactive, always searching for stability, the greatest power you can offer is the ability to remain still. Patience is often misunderstood. Many see it as passive waiting, as inaction, as something weak. But in reality, patience is one of the strongest forces a person can cultivate. It is the ability to remain steady in uncertainty, to persist through difficulty, to resist the impulse for immediate gratification. It is not passivity, it is power. Because those who master patience master time itself. Most people are controlled by urgency. They want results now. They want answers immediately. They want change without delay. But those who rush, who force, who act impulsively often make mistakes. They quit when progress is slow. They give up on relationships that need time to grow. They abandon ideas before they have a chance to mature. In contrast, those who embrace patience understand that anything truly valuable, wisdom, skill, mastery, requires endurance. They do not fear slow progress because they know that growth is not measured in days, but in years. Science supports this truth. Studies on delayed gratification, like the famous Stanford marshmallow experiment, show that individuals who practice patience achieve higher levels of success, emotional stability, and long-term fulfillment. The ability to resist immediate rewards in favor of greater future benefits is a key predictor of personal and professional achievement. In other words, patience is not just a virtue. It is a skill that directly impacts success. The greatest thinkers and leaders have always understood this. Lao Tzu, the ancient Chinese philosopher, taught that nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. The Stoics believed in trusting the process of life, understanding that time reveals what effort alone cannot. Even great military strategists, like Sun Tzu, knew that victory often belongs to the one who waits for the right moment to strike. None of these figures saw patience as weakness. they saw it as the highest form of discipline. To develop patience in your own life, practice three things. First, train yourself to sit with discomfort. When frustration arises, whether from slow progress, delayed outcomes, or uncertainty, observe it without acting on it. Second, adopt the long-term perspective. Ask yourself, will this matter in 5 years? Am I judging the process too soon? Most people abandon the path too early because they do not give it time to unfold. Third, trust the unseen work. Growth happens beneath the surface, like roots spreading before a tree rises. Just because you do not see immediate results does not mean progress is not happening. Lao Tzu knew that patience moves mountains. Neuroscience proves that those who delay gratification achieve greater success. The wisest minds in history have shown that true strength is not in rushing, but in trusting the process. Their lesson is clear. The impatient are ruled by time, but those who master patience rule over it. When you learn to wait without frustration, to persist without needing instant results, you develop an advantage that few possess. The ability to outlast, to endure, to win through stillness. In a world that moves fast, that demands constant stimulation, that rewards speed over depth, presence is becoming a lost art. Most people are physically here, but mentally elsewhere, distracted by thoughts of the past, anxieties about the future, or the endless pull of digital noise. They move through life without truly experiencing it, their minds always chasing the next task, the next distraction, the next thing. But those who train themselves in the power of presence understand that life does not exist in the past or the future. It exists only in this moment. And those who can fully inhabit it gain an advantage that few ever realize. Presence is not just about focus. It is about depth. It is about fully engaging with what is in front of you, with your work, your relationships, your environment. It is about experiencing life with clarity rather than rushing through it on autopilot. When you are truly present, conversations become deeper, experiences become richer, decisions become clearer. You stop reacting impulsively, and instead, you respond with purpose. Neuroscience confirms what ancient wisdom has long taught. Studies on mindfulness show that individuals who cultivate presence have lower stress levels, improved memory, and greater emotional resilience. The brain functions better when it is not constantly switching between past regrets and future worries. This is why people who practice mindfulness report feeling more alive, more grounded, more in control. Not because their lives are easier, but because they are fully engaged in them. History's greatest minds understood this deeply. The Stoics, like Marcus Aurelius, reminded themselves daily that life is short, that the present moment is all that truly belongs to us. Zen masters trained their minds to focus on the simplest of actions, breathing, walking, drinking tea, not because these acts were special, but because they understood that when done with full attention, even the smallest moments become profound. Great leaders, from warriors to poets to revolutionaries, knew that the ability to be fully present in high-stakes situations was what separated the great from the ordinary. To cultivate presence in your own life, train yourself in three ways. First, practice single-tasking. Instead of dividing your attention between multiple things, give your full focus to one task at a time. Second, develop awareness of your thoughts. Catch yourself when your mind drifts into worry or regret, and gently bring it back to the now. Third, create small rituals of mindfulness. Whether it is pausing to take a deep breath before responding in conversation, fully tasting each bite of your food, or feeling the sensation of your steps as you walk, These small acts train the brain to stay anchored in the present. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "Confine yourself to the present." Neuroscience proves that presence reduces stress and improves mental clarity. Zen philosophy teaches that true peace is found not in escaping life, but in fully experiencing it. Their lesson is clear. Distraction weakens the mind, but presence sharpens it. And the greatest advantage you can develop is not in doing more, but in being fully here, fully engaged, fully alive. Because life is not waiting for you in the future. It is happening now. Stillness is often mistaken for idleness, for doing nothing. But in reality, stillness is one of the most powerful states a person can cultivate. It is not about inactivity. It is about deliberate awareness, about creating space for clarity to emerge. In a world that glorifies constant movement, endless productivity, and relentless ambition, those who understand the value of stillness gain an advantage few ever recognize. Because while others are caught in the noise, the mind that knows how to be still sees everything clearly. Most people avoid stillness because they fear it. They equate silence with emptiness, with stagnation, with falling behind. So they fill every gap with distractions, scrolling, multitasking, jumping from one thought to another, always seeking the next thing to occupy their attention. But in doing so, they weaken their ability to think deeply, to make wise decisions, to truly understand themselves. They are always reacting, never reflecting, always consuming, never processing, always moving, never seeing. The greatest thinkers, warriors, and philosophers knew otherwise. Socrates believed that wisdom came not from having all the answers, but from creating the space to question. The Stoics, like Seneca, practiced moments of stillness daily, believing that only a quiet mind could see truth without distortion. The samurai trained themselves to remain motionless, not as a sign of passivity, but as a way to cultivate absolute control over their impulses. Even great artists, scientists, and strategists have spoken of the necessity of stillness, not as a break from thinking, but as a gateway to deeper insight. Science confirms what these traditions understood. Neuroscientific studies show that when the mind is at rest, not bombarded with constant input, it enters a state of deep processing. This is where creativity flourishes, where problem-solving strengthens, where memories consolidate. It is why moments of inspiration often come not in the middle of frantic work, but in the quiet, while walking, while sitting in thought, while simply being still. In other words, the mind needs space to think. Without it, clarity is impossible. To cultivate stillness, begin with three simple practices. First, create moments of silence in your day. Even just a few minutes without external noise, without screens, without interruptions, allows the mind to reset. Second, embrace doing nothing, not as a waste of time, but as a way to let deeper thoughts surface. This is why many of history's greatest minds took long walks, sat in quiet reflection, or simply stared out at the horizon. Third, resist the urge to always fill the gaps. If you have a moment of stillness, don't immediately reach for your phone or seek distraction. Let the mind settle. Observe what arises when the noise fades. Seneca knew that stillness sharpens the mind. Neuroscience proves that the brain needs quiet to function at its highest level. The greatest warriors, leaders, and thinkers have always understood that clarity does not come from more noise, more movement, more input. It comes from learning to be still, from creating space for wisdom to emerge. Their lesson is clear. When the world speeds up, slow down. When the mind races, let it rest. Because in stillness, you do not lose time, you gain understanding. Acceptance is not surrender, it is not giving up, nor is it passively allowing life to happen without resistance. True acceptance is an act of power. It is the ability to see reality as it is, without illusion, without denial, without wishing it were different. It is the strength to embrace what cannot be changed and the wisdom to act on what can. Those who master acceptance do not become victims of life's uncertainties. They become unshakable. Most people fight against reality. They resist what is, clinging to what was, or what they think should be. They waste energy wishing the past were different, hoping that people will change, or trying to control outcomes that were never within their grasp. This struggle against what is only creates suffering, because reality does not bend to our desires. The storm does not stop because you protest it. Time does not reverse because you dwell on regret. People do not change because you will them to. The more you resist, the more you suffer. But the moment you accept, you free yourself from unnecessary pain. The Stoics understood this well. Epictetus taught that freedom comes from focusing only on what is within our control, our thoughts, our actions, our mindset, while releasing attachment to what is beyond it. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself daily that he had no power over external events, only over his response to them. Even Buddhist philosophy teaches the same principle. Suffering is not in the event itself, but in our resistance to it. Acceptance dissolves suffering. Modern psychology confirms this. Studies on radical acceptance, a concept used in cognitive behavioral therapy, show that people who embrace reality rather than fight it experience lower stress, better mental health, and greater resilience. This does not mean passivity. It means seeing things clearly so that you can act effectively. Because when you stop wasting energy on what cannot be changed, you redirect that energy toward what can. To cultivate acceptance, practice three things. First, recognize when you are resisting reality. If you feel frustration, ask yourself, am I fighting against something I cannot control? Second, shift your focus to action. If something can be changed, work on it. If it cannot, release it. Third, remind yourself that peace comes not from perfect circumstances, but from your ability to remain steady regardless of them. Epictetus knew that suffering is born from resistance. Neuroscience proves that acceptance lowers stress and increases resilience. The great thinkers, warriors, and leaders of history all understood one truth. Acceptance is not weakness, it is clarity. It is the refusal to waste energy on illusions, the discipline to see reality as it is, and the wisdom to act where action is possible. Their lesson is clear. What you accept no longer controls you, and in that freedom, true power is found. Gratitude is often misunderstood. Many see it as a soft virtue, a passive appreciation of what is pleasant. But in reality, gratitude is an active discipline, a mental framework that transforms the way you see the world. It is not about ignoring hardship or pretending life is perfect. It's about training your mind to recognize abundance where others see lack, to find strength in what already exists rather than obsessing over what is missing. And those who cultivate this mindset gain something far greater than fleeting happiness. They gain unshakable inner peace. Most people live in a state of silent dissatisfaction. They measure their lives by what they lack rather than what they have. They focus on what is missing, what went wrong, what could have been. They move from one goal to another, one achievement to the next. Yet no matter how much they accomplish, it never feels like enough. This is because the mind, when left unchecked, is wired for comparison, for wanting more, for finding flaws. But those who master gratitude break free from this cycle, not by denying ambition, but by grounding themselves in what is already present. Neuroscience supports this truth. Studies on gratitude reveal that individuals who practice it regularly experience lower stress, increased mental resilience, and improved overall well-being. The brain, when trained to focus on what is good, naturally reduces negative thought patterns. In other words, gratitude rewires the mind to seek abundance rather than scarcity, stability rather than anxiety. This is why those who practice it are not just happier, they are stronger. They do not depend on external validation or perfect conditions to feel at peace. They create that peace from within. The greatest minds throughout history understood this deeply. The Stoics, like Seneca, advised keeping a gratitude practice to remind oneself of life's hidden fortunes. Marcus Aurelius, despite ruling an empire, constantly reflected on the simple blessings of life. A sunrise, the ability to breathe, the wisdom of those who came before him. Buddhist philosophy teaches that suffering is not caused by what we lack, but by our attachment to what we think we need. And great leaders across cultures have reinforced the same lesson. Gratitude is not a reaction to good circumstances. It is a chosen perspective, a way of seeing. To build this mindset, practice three things. First, start each day by identifying what you already have. Not just material things, but experiences, lessons, relationships, even struggles that made you stronger. Second, shift your focus when faced with adversity. Instead of asking, "Why is this happening to me?" ask, "What is this teaching me?" Third, express gratitude in action. Not just in words, but by using what you have to create, to contribute, to help others. Because gratitude is not just about recognition, it is about application. Seneca knew that gratitude was a source of strength. Neuroscience proves that it enhances mental resilience. Philosophers, warriors, and leaders throughout history have shown that true peace does not come from getting more, but from appreciating what already exists. Their lesson is clear. If you cannot be grateful now, you never will be. Because gratitude is not about circumstances, it is about training your mind to see what is already there. And once you do, you realize that peace was never something to chase. It was always within you. Strength is often associated with invulnerability, an unshaken, unbreakable exterior that refuses to bend. But true strength is not about resisting emotion, nor is it about appearing untouchable. It is about having the courage to be open, to feel, to embrace vulnerability without fear. Because vulnerability is not weakness. It is the foundation of resilience, of connection, of real inner power. Most people spend their lives building walls around themselves, hiding their struggles, suppressing their emotions, fearing that if they reveal too much, they will be seen as weak. But this avoidance does not create strength. It creates isolation. It leads to a life of guarded interactions, of suppressed emotions that turn into stress, of relationships that remain surface level because they lack the depth that comes from true openness. The strongest individuals are not those who hide behind a facade of control, but those who have mastered the balance between strength and openness. Psychology confirms this. Studies on emotional resilience show that individuals who embrace vulnerability, who acknowledge their struggles rather than suppress them, experience lower stress, deeper relationships, and greater psychological well-being. This is because denying emotions does not make them disappear. It only buries them deeper, where they continue to shape behavior unconsciously. But those who confront what they feel, who allow themselves to be seen fully, develop the kind of confidence that cannot be shaken. The greatest minds and leaders have always understood this. Lao Tzu taught that the softest thing in the world overcomes the hardest. The Stoics, despite their focus on discipline and control, believed in self-awareness, knowing one's limitations, understanding emotions, and mastering them rather than pretending they do not exist. Even the samurai, known for their discipline in battle, embraced the philosophy of kintsugi, the idea that broken things, when mended with care, become more beautiful for having been broken. These traditions do not see vulnerability as a flaw. They see it as part of wholeness. To cultivate this strength, practice three things. First, allow yourself to acknowledge discomfort. When you feel fear, sadness, or doubt, do not push it away. Observe it. Understand it. Let it move through you. Second, share honestly with those you trust. Strength is not in pretending you need no one. It is in knowing when to lean on others without losing yourself. Third, shift your mindset. Stop seeing vulnerability as something to be avoided and start seeing it as a tool for connection, for growth, for understanding yourself more deeply. Lao Tzu knew that softness overcomes hardness. Neuroscience proves that embracing emotion makes us stronger, not weaker. The greatest philosophers, warriors, and thinkers have all shown that true power is not found in shutting the world out, but in standing within it fully, without fear. Their lesson is clear. The mind that resists feeling remains rigid and breakable, but the mind that allows itself to be open, to be real, to be vulnerable, that mind is truly indestructible. Most people drift through life, moving from one obligation to the next, reacting to circumstances rather than shaping them. They follow routines without questioning them, chase goals that were never truly their own, and measure success by external standards rather than internal fulfillment. But those who live with purpose and intention experience life differently. They are not pulled in every direction by distractions or societal expectations. They walk their own path, not because it is easy, but because it is chosen. Living with intention is not about having every step planned out. It is about knowing what truly matters to you and ensuring that your actions align with that vision. It is about deciding moment by moment where your energy will go, rather than allowing the world to decide for you. Because every action, no matter how small, is a vote for the person you are becoming. The question is, are your daily choices leading you toward the life you want, or are they simply habits of convenience? Science supports this idea. Psychological studies on goal setting and intrinsic motivation show that people who align their actions with their core values experience greater life satisfaction, reduced stress, and a stronger sense of meaning. When your actions are intentional, when they are driven by purpose rather than impulse, you develop a deep inner clarity. You no longer feel lost because every step, even the uncertain ones, has direction. History's greatest minds understood this well. Aristotle believed that the highest form of life was one lived with purpose, where every action served a greater aim. Viktor Frankl, a survivor of the Holocaust, discovered through unimaginable suffering that those who had a sense of meaning could endure even the darkest conditions. The Stoics, like Epictetus, taught that clarity of purpose freed a person from unnecessary distractions, allowing them to focus on what truly mattered. Across cultures, across time, the lesson remains the same. Without purpose, life controls you. With purpose, you control life. To cultivate this way of living, practice three things. First, define what truly matters to you. Not what others expect, not what society tells you, but what deeply resonates with you. Second, align your daily actions with your values. Ask yourself, is how I'm spending my time leading me toward what I want, or pulling me further away? Third, eliminate the unnecessary. The more you remove distractions and obligations that do not serve your vision, the more energy you have for what does. Aristotle taught that purpose elevates life. Science proves that intentional living leads to fulfillment. The greatest thinkers, leaders, and philosophers have all shown that life is not about doing more, but about doing what matters. Their lesson is clear. You do not need permission to live with purpose. You do not need certainty to walk your path. You only need to decide, right now, that your life will be shaped by intention, not by accident. Life is always pulling us in different directions. Expectations, distractions, the endless noise of the world around us. Most people move through it unconsciously, reacting rather than choosing, rushing rather than living. But those who train their minds, who cultivate stillness, presence, and purpose, experience life differently. They are not controlled by emotions, they master them. They do not seek validation from the outside. They build strength from within. They do not allow life to dictate their path. They shape it with intention. The wisdom of the Stoics, the insights of ancient philosophers, the findings of modern science all point to the same truth. Mental strength is not about force. It is about clarity. It is about learning when to act and when to let go, when to push forward and when to be still. Strength is not found in resistance to life, but in the ability to move with it, to adapt without breaking, to remain centered even when the world around you is in chaos. Every great mind, every leader, every warrior of thought and action understood this. Your mind is either your greatest weapon or your greatest obstacle. The difference lies in how you train it, how you shape your thoughts, how you choose to engage with the world. Because no one can give you peace, no one can give you discipline, no one can give you clarity. These are things you must cultivate within yourself. So, as you step back into your day, remember this: the power to respond rather than react, to embrace rather than resist, to live with purpose rather than distraction. It has always been in your hands. The question is not whether you are capable. The question is whether you are willing.